Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, I'm in Baltimore. Padres here for a two-game series against the Orioles. And Jay Posner, he's back in San Diego, where I will thankfully be headed back here in a couple days. But Jay, what do we call this edition? The back under 500 edition, the bullpen edition, the gift-wrapped Orioles edition? Where do we start for this one?
Well, Manny Machado's back in Baltimore. We could start there real quick,
okay.
But whatever. He's there. You wrote about it. People should read it. You know, Manny, that was very much a Manny being Manny conversation, it sounds like you had with him, where, you know, he's not going to really open up or anything. But I thought it was good. He talked about what it meant playing there, and he hopes that he doesn't get booed and be nice to get a nice reception. I would be really, really surprised if he didn't get a nice reception. I mean, he's not going to get a Pujols St. Louis reception, but I would be surprised if he didn't get a nice ovation, you know, when he comes up in the first inning tonight.
Yeah, I look forward to it as a moment. I do. I mean, from the Padres fan perspective, okay, here's a guy that, you know, has sort of, you know, he's obviously been one of the biggest, arguably the biggest, if not for Fernando Tatis, but like the biggest sign of change, the spending of the $300 million. That's great. Enjoy it for him, because I think it will be a really cool moment. The guy, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, came up, he was younger than Tatis when he came up. He had 162 homers here. He played in 850-something games. He was a big part of the Orioles being a decent team during his tenure. I do look forward to it, but I think there's bigger things going on with the team.
Well, obviously, and you mentioned that the Orioles being a decent team, they are anything but decent right now. So this is very much gift wrap for the Padres. The Orioles are 22-56. You know, they started 4-1, which is pretty funny. So 18-55 since then, to do the math. The one thing I came up with that I thought was interesting is they won 4 in a row, games 2 through 5. They won 4 in a row since then, and we're talking like this is almost 3 months. Since then, almost 75 games, they've won 2 in a row twice. That's it. They've never won more than 2 in a row. They won 2 in a row twice in late April and early May. So since May 4 and May 6, they have not won 2 games in a row. They just had a 10-game losing streak that ended on Saturday. They obviously went out and celebrated like crazy Saturday night because they lost 13-3 on Sunday. Took a day off on Monday. And now they will welcome the Padres. But again, and Kevin, we just saw this last week. Padres sweep Milwaukee. Great. Everything's going well. Now they go play Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's terrible. And they get swept by Pittsburgh. And the good news for Padre fans and the Padres, I guess, is no more games against the Pirates this year. The Padres incredibly lost 6 out of 7 against Pittsburgh. The big takeaway from that series, I guess there were two for me. One, the hitting was terrible for 2 games. Machado was the only one who did anything really on Friday and Saturday. Then they have this great game on Sunday with the bats. Got a couple breaks, you know, a couple of those Machado and Hedges, I think, both had 2 RBI singles that, you know, looked like line drives in the box score but were anything but. And then, you know, the bullpen comes up and bites them again. And of all people, Kirby Yates, you know. But again, you knew he wasn't going to be perfect all year. And it came up on Sunday, and they still had a chance to win and couldn't get 3 outs.
Yeah. Before we get to that, I want to say that not only like are the Orioles terrible, but Jay, like when we talk about gift wrapped, their bullpen, which tonight's a bullpen game for the Orioles,
correct?
Worst ERA, and against right-handed batters, like historically, epically terrible, their bullpen and their entire staff.
Right.
And hey, wow, what do you know? The Padres, except for Eric Hosmer, exclusively right-handed probably the next 2 days. You know, so, I mean, not just like, oh, this is a bad team, but like made for the Padres. So, probably have to write about a sweep. And I'm joking, but that is how it works. The bullpen, Jay, 4 or 5 of the Padres' last 10 losses, the bullpen has taken the loss, and not just taken the loss, but in spectacular fashion. 3 of those, Craig Stammen, right? There was the 4 home run game. There was a couple times where the guy had to come in and pick up Trey Wingenter, and then in the next inning, he gave up runs. Another one he gave up was his own.
I think he had four straight scoreless outings before the Saturday game. And I was just going to say, that's the thing about this is that these guys get on a roll, And, you know, everyone's like, oh, how could you go with Stammen there in that situation on Saturday? Well, he had just had four really good outings in a row. So are you going to go off of that? Or are you going to go off before and just wait for the bad outing? I mean, these guys all have good outings at times. I mean, Phil Maton was very good for an inning on Sunday, and then he wasn't. And Maton's had good outings. He's had good multi-inning outings. He's had four multi-inning outings this year where he gave up either zero or one run, which is all they needed from him on Sunday. So it's not like that all of these guys have been terrible every time they go out to the mound. It just seems like someone is terrible, at least one someone is terrible at just the wrong time.
There you go. I mean, that's what you said. And then I'll also look and I'll go even in, like in these games where they end up giving up runs, you know, they had to come in to start the fifth or the sixth, and two relievers will be just fantastic. And then the guy will come in and give up two runs. What they've been doing in that bullpen is walking, and no one has an explanation for it, because they may still, as a bullpen, have given up the fewest walks per inning. But they are coming back to bite them. And I'm not just talking about a walk-off walk like in Sunday's game. Right. A lead-off walk or a zero-out walk. In Stammen's case, one time a two-out walk that led to two runs. It's fallen apart. They thought that the bullpen flu had touched everyone. Oh, wait, it hadn't really touched Kirby. So right. Now maybe it has. You have to think about Craig Stammen being 35 years old. And that's just something that, I mean, Craig Stammen thinks about that. But, I mean, how many podcasts can we do where we explain the bullpen and we talk about how, look, this team isn't going to find help outside like some sort of magic thing. You know what? They may make a trade that gets them a bullpen arm and that guy may be serviceable, but they're looking more like Robert Stock finding the strike zone, Jose Castillo saying a prayer for the ligament, Andres Munoz, this other kid who, of course, you know, I got to bungle one name or forget one name, but another kid down in AAA. Trevor McGill, there it is. Won a podcast for me. Haven't got the day wrong today. Which, until you do a baseball season, you don't know how difficult it is to remember it's Tuesday. A Monday off day. What is that? So,
but
Jay,
no, I mean,
I don't
that,
know.
Yeah, that's the problem is, like, where do you fix it? Okay, Stammen's not your eighth inning guy. Who is your eighth inning guy? Okay,
there you go.
Okay, let's say it's Wingenter. Wingenter hasn't been consistently brilliant all year either. So the first time he gives up, you know, something in the eighth inning, it's like, oh, great. What was he doing in the eighth inning? There are no solutions right now, except they need to pitch better. I mean, which sounds so stupid, but they were counting on a bunch of guys, you know, being really good this year. And they have a bunch of guys who have been really good at times, but not often enough. And, I mean, who would have thought, and I did, you know, they did do this the other night. Maybe Luis Perdomo is the eighth inning guy for now.
Yep.
I mean, he was on Sunday. Now, Stammen was unavailable. But, you know, you and I were texting during the game, and before, after the seventh, you know, I was like, who gets the eighth? Perdomo? And you know, that was it. So, to me, maybe why not give Perdomo the eighth now and see what he can do with it? And maybe in certain situations, if the seventh is going to be tougher, give Perdomo the seventh. I mean, I'm not sure that you – I'm not a big fan of it has to be the seventh or the eighth. I mean, I do think, look, they're locked into Yates in the ninth. He's a one-inning guy. He hasn't done anything but one inning all year. I don't see that they're suddenly going to change that or that they should change that. But, you know, maybe move Perdomo into more high-leverage situations, which is what we saw on Sunday. And I would expect that going forward. There's no reason – at this point, the way Perdomo's pitching, not to see him in those situations and see what he can do with it.
I would think at this point like a given practically. Cal Quantrill had to come into like at least a medium leverage situation, and he will again, and then we'll see what happens. Also, I believe Denelson Lamet will be back. I mean, it's forthcoming. So, you know what? Matt Strom starts tomorrow night, and that very well could be his final start. He goes back to the bullpen, gets back into that role, and we'll see. And you know, in a bit, in a way, that's a shame. But I really think that's the direction that the Padres are headed, and he has been a loss to the bullpen. One thing to consider, if Jose Castillo comes back, the reason they were so excited about him being able to come back last week when they thought, before he pulled himself out of a game in El Paso with some tightness in the forearm, being careful, is that they had these three off days in eight games, and it was going to provide rest for him. You know, when he comes back, he's not going to pitch them back-to-back games, maybe the rest of the season.
Right, right. Well, there's no reason for him to do that right,
right
now.
Same with Miguel and Munoz. I mean, you're very structured in the minor leagues for the most part. And the young guys are going to be careful with. So, I mean, there's just going to be this, like, chess game, as if it isn't already for a National League manager in particular. But it's going to be this chess game all season. I wrote about it over the weekend. It's a pitching staff now. There's a few starters and then a pitching staff.
No, and I don't have any issue with that. I mean, you've got your guys that are going to start regularly. And look, I'm looking forward to seeing Logan Allen again tonight. And I know he's not facing the greatest lineup in the world, but they do have some power. I mean, Trey Mancini's been really good, 17 homers. Renato Nunez has 16. They've got a couple other guys, and that's a home run ballpark, as Manny Machado has hinted out a couple times this season. But again, to see Logan Allen a week after shutting out the Brewers, now he goes against a bad team. Let's see what he does. Let's see what Strom does tomorrow. And, you know, you're going to have Paddock and Lucchesi and Lauer pretty much as regulars. But if Quantrill's in the bullpen and he can get you a couple innings on these games, like maybe he piggybacks with Denelson Lamet when Lamet comes back and Lamet throws three or four innings, and there's no reason Quantrill can't throw three or four innings. I mean, I think they had to hit for him the other day was the only reason that he probably, you know, didn't get another inning out of it, because there's no reason he can't be stretched out. So, yeah, it's going to be just different, and curious to see how things get mixed and matched with when innings limits and all that sort of thing so far. But they obviously need to find some people who can be more consistent, especially later in games, because a lot of these starters, you know, like it or not, they're not going to go more than, you know, four, five, six innings, with the exception of, you hope someone like Lucchesi can do that, can keep doing that, which, you know, he wasn't able to do on Sunday, but he was in his previous start.
Yeah, I really think, you know, and I would have made a bigger deal out of it, obviously, if he hadn't had the one real bad inning, but he followed it by battling out of another inning, and I just think that's a huge growth thing for Joey Lucchesi. Sometimes, you know, we're getting focused on certain things, and you know, this team is still building for the future, and they want to find out, is Joey Lucchesi like a number three, four, or five starter when we're really good, is what they're thinking, and I think Joey is showing that, even in his outing the other day, because if you're number... whatever, right? Sometimes your number one has to battle to get through five. But if your number four starter battles and gets you through five and keeps you, he was in line to win that game.
Right.
All right. That's excellent, actually.
What did you see from, I didn't get a chance to see much of the game that Paddock pitched. I did see him get out of the bases loaded.
That was big.
Situation, which was big. But how did he look? Where was his velocity? Where was his changeup, his curve? What'd you see out of that game, and what did the Padres see?
Much like his previous start before he went for that 10-day little rest there, the velocity was up, maybe not as much as in San Francisco, but certainly better than during that time where he has to be reminded, though, during the games, from my understanding, to throw that pitch. You know, just let it go, Chris. You've got command. And that's interesting. That's part of the growing curve, right? That maybe some of us, like, thought that the sheriff, he was beyond that. Well, there's a growth curve. The changeup still obviously a lot better, but here's the deal. I was super impressed with the Pirates. I mean, you know, I think Johnny Washington's actually doing a really good job as the hitting coach from all feedback and the improvements that we're seeing. But he could just show what the Pirates did the last 2 days and making the Padres pitchers work and putting the fouling balls off, putting balls in play and letting stuff happen. And that's, these guys, teams are not biting on that changeup anymore. And Paddock misses by a little bit, but they're balls. And then he leaves one up and they hit it. He's going to have to learn how to pitch. They're also, while you know, Chris Paddock will take the offseason and sort of assess his pitch mix, the Padres are pushing for him to throw different pitches at different times. Maybe in the offseason, start developing. Maybe it won't be for another year, but start developing a slider. No matter how good your pitches are, you got to have more than two.
And he didn't walk almost anybody when he was in the minors.
No.
And it seems like his command, I mean, even I don't have his walk numbers in front of me. I know he's certainly walked more than he did in the minors, but is he is he nibbling a little bit too much on with his fastball?
That's what I was around about saying. I should have just said it, like you. That's why you're the editor, Jay. He's nibbling, man. That's where the fastball velocity is down sometimes. That's where the changeup that just misses, then he tries to place it, and oops, it was left up, and they hit it. You're not getting the swing and miss on that anymore, and they say it all comes back to whatever mechanical stuff that, look, I'm not going to pretend like I can get into it, the arm speed and all that, but that's what they say it all comes back to.
Can't you give me some spin rate numbers?
Some spin rate, getting over the ball, some, you know, arm speed. No, Jay, I will not.
How about arm side? How about arm side, glove side?
I believe his whip is still below one. So
okay.
He's still, let's remember here, the kid's having a pretty good rookie year.
Right. I mean, I think that's the, it started so well that, like, you start, wow, geez, he's not blowing people away all the time. And I wonder if it'd be funny to see when they set the rotation after the break, if he winds up pitching in that Mets series after everything that happened with Pete Alonso and with Alonso now having like 87 home runs.
It will be interesting
just in the first half.
They refer back to that, different people in the organization. And it's just, I don't want to read too much into it, but they refer back to that about the, you know, the guy is best when he's pumped up. Now, you can't get to that level every time. That is a learning experience for him. But somehow he hasn't quite achieved that or any semblance of that or enough of a semblance of that since. So that will be interesting.
Well, it's certainly, you know, they can set the rotation however they want coming out of the break, and that's the second week out of the break, 23, 24, 25 of July. So something to keep an eye on then. But before that, what else, anything offensively that you saw over the weekend? Like I said, Friday and Saturday seemed terrible. I guess we should mention, it's like Fernando Tatis Jr., we just kind of take for granted now that he's going to do things like scoring on a pop-up to the second baseman, which was, you know, just remarkable. It was so remarkable, Kevin. SportsCenter on Sunday night, I had on the end of the game where the Angels were trying to blow a 6-0 lead in the ninth inning against the Cardinals. It got to 6-4. They actually had the potential winning run at the plate. They finally got out of it. SportsCenter comes on, and the first thing they show was Tatis scoring from third base on that play. So it just shows how things have changed a little bit with the Padres that I'm sure there were probably nights where the Padres didn't even make SportsCenter over the past few years and didn't even deserve to. But But here was their superstar in the making leading that. So and it just seems like the what do the other guys think of Tatis?
Well, I mean, are they, I have do a they story just shake, I'm working on.
Okay, yeah, do they just kind of shake their head, or he seems to just bring such energy to the. To the
That's
dugout.
It energy to the dugout, and like my story we'll focus on for a Sunday's paper, for what we'll probably post it Friday, is, okay, so we're like 40 games into this guy's career. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Except it's the way he does it, the way he carries himself, the tools and the instincts he has that are far beyond his years that make veterans, and let's be honest, there's Eric Hosmer, Manny Machado, and Ian Kinsler, right?
Right.
But Ian Kinsler, basically the old schoolist of the old of the remaining players, all right? There aren't many like him, okay? And he has a little bit of a wait and see, but no, he believes this kid's going to be the best player in the majors, or one of them. And that really speaks a lot, and hopefully I can paint that in the story. These guys talk about his instincts. You know, Eric Hosmer has really good instincts. He doesn't have Tatis's talent or speed.
Right.
Manny Machado didn't have his speed. You know, this guy has at least six tools, and once he's played in the majors a little while and he adds knowledge, he's going to be like a seven-tool player. And that's, like, preposterous. And what you were talking about, Jay, yesterday I was sitting having lunch in my hotel, and I was working too. But I look up, and pardon the interruption, which, you know, is talk gab fest, yada, yada. They have to talk about something, and their question was, should someone tell Tatis to throttle it back? And I was to jump out of my. But
let's not have a player who's
right.
having fun and energetic.
That
and,
was their point. So it was like the producer, whoever came up with the question, and then Michael Wilbon, whoever was filling in. I don't even watch the show anymore unless I'm in the hotel.
Right.
That was their whole thing about how preposterous that would be. So there's that. But the fact they were talking about Fernando Tatis Jr. on pardon the interruption, on a national show on the East Coast, and now that everywhere we go, the other media, the other team, there's a certain amount of anticipation. And again, I did tweet about it, and when it happened, and players and coaches noticed, and it'll be in my story. In Colorado, this is the kind of thing you only see in St. Louis, maybe at Wrigley. When he made a diving play, I think he robbed Trevor Story. It was like a 105-mile-an-hour liner.
Yeah, that was the game where he came in when Machado got thrown out, right? And he made that ridiculous diving catch.
The crowd cheered at Coors Field. Yeah. That just doesn't happen. And then it was shown on the screen, and they cheered again. Like, you're watching something special. It's fun. I saw that you tweeted the other day, right after that, where he scored on the pop-up to just beyond second, that's why you don't leave. And that's becoming basically the cliche, but because it's true, you don't leave when Tatis is in the game.
Right. I mean, it's if he's coming up, or especially it seems like when he's in the field and on the bases, obviously, no, you can't take your eyes off the set or the field for even a second. Because you never know. I mean, I said I looked away when the pop-up was hit. It was like, oh, great, a pop-up. They're not even going to get the run in. And then all of a sudden, the Jesse Agler screaming that he's scoring on the TV.
I can't wait. And so there's that play, which Kevin Newman, the Poway kid, who ends up being the walk-off hero, right?
Right,
had
right.
Himself a pretty good series. But he talked about how he'd learn, and Clint Hurdle talked about how he'd learn. And that's all well and good, but will you? I mean, what can you do to a certain extent? But they will. They won't be sleeping on this guy. But on certain plays, like, I forget who hit the comebacker that he scored on in Colorado, which is still my favorite play, because the pitcher looked him back, mm-hmm. then Daniel Murphy's the first baseman, and it was a contact play, but you don't go when it's hit to the pitcher, and Tatis froze and then scored on it. It's like, how do defenses adjust and change how they're playing him? Because they're nervous about Tatis. So how does that help other players? I mean, does the pitcher in the future, does he freeze and then the runner makes it to first? I mean, mm-hmm. that sounds preposterous, but like, he is freaking out other defenses, and that's a big deal.
Right, right. No, it's great, and it's obviously a story that I'm looking forward to. I think a lot of people will as well. So, but we have a couple games to get through before that, and you have a long flight home after that, and then we will talk again on Friday when the Cardinals are in town, the greatest fans in all of baseball. And by the way, very good on Colorado for showing a great play by the opposing team on the video board, because I can think of some stadiums maybe a mile or so from where I'm sitting right now where that isn't a big part of how things go. Sometimes it's good just to show great baseball plays on the big video board.
So agreed. And there's a lot of places that don't do it. And I thought of you the other day as we close here, all the confusion. There were 5 replays in that game on Sunday, in addition, to all the other things that happened in 4 hours and 58 minutes and 11 innings. And not one of them was explained, including a couple, like the one in the, it was the 11th, where they stopped for like 4 minutes or so because Clint Hurdle was challenging whether the throw that got past Austin Hedges went into the crowd and his runner should be on second. And they never explained it. I mean, I think there's momentum being gained to start to get that explained, which has been a pet peeve of yours for a long time, to get that explained like NFL officials.
Right, right. I mean, that's different than the other point I was making, but absolutely. The fact that an umpire and again, the announcers, I don't remember if it was Agler or Mud Grant, said it on the broadcast, that what would be so bad about having the umpire flick on his microphone and say, either we're going to look at this, or when it's done, we looked at this and, the play stands as called or whatever, just to explain to people.
There's so many ways,
what
Jay.
Happened. And I think on that play, I think the ball did probably strike a camera in the camera well and come back on the field. But I don't think there was never a definitive angle, at least on TV, that could show it. So they had to keep it the same. But I think Machado might have been spared a fourth error in that series by the fact that nobody saw that.
Well, not to go, and I'll stop. I'm going to say one thing, and you're not allowed to rebut because we're just going to go into a rabbit hole here. But there were a couple times where the Padres got, I felt at least, were let's say, robbed or whatever because of the rule of there has to be definitive evidence. And I thought there were a couple times there that had the call on the field been differently, it would have gone in the Padres' favor, but it didn't because there wasn't. So, anyway,
replay. I agree. I agree. So I'm not rebutting it. So anyway, enjoy Camden Yards, which is a great place. Although it's been so long since I was there, I was thinking about it. It's been like almost 25 years since I was there. It's now one of the older ballparks in baseball.
Larry Lucchino and company started basically, right?
Yeah, the ballpark revolution started right there. So enjoy that, and we will talk on Friday ahead of the Cardinals, and I believe the Giants are here for the part of that home, the six-game homestand. So thanks for listening, everybody. Everyone.